Michael Robinson. Sorry, I didn't get to see. Oh, look at who's fancy. Look at this suit.
I'm not fancy.
It's very smart. What color is that suit? Well, we'll talk about it on the air. I like to talk about these things on the air.
David. Football David.
The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Dameshek. Welcome to the latest episode of the Dave Dameshek Football Program, available as always on iTunes, Stitcher, and NFL.com/Sheck.
S-H-E-K, Sheck.
Here in mid-July, we are a matter of days, nay, hours from our favorite pro football players heading off to community college campuses and wherever else people do their training camp. As we get ready, the days are now really counting down to the kickoff of 2014 football season. Football is over. We have made it. We appreciate what they did. Soccer, it bridged the gap for us a little bit here. Now we're in July, and before we know it, we'll be watching football and everything else. So let's kibitz about all of us, and this is going to be a good show. Like Babe Ruth in the 33 World Series, I believe, is when he did this. He called his shot to center field in Wrigley Field. I'm calling my shot here on this episode of the DDFP. This is going to be a good one because we have one of our very favorite football playing guests here with us, seated directly across from me in Studio 4 as we await the unveiling of Studio 66, Maximum Strength. It is it's coming soon before we get the kickoff. Meantime, let's say hello to one of our pals here. He's a Super Bowl champion now. It is Michael Robinson. What's the poop, fella?
What's going on, Dave? It sounds good, man. I like the introduction.
Do
Super
you?
Bowl champion, man. That sounds good, man. It's awesome.
Has it occurred to you, did Pete Carroll ever say to anybody, hey, you got that ring now, and no one can ever take it away from you? Has he used that exact phrase? Because a lot of head coaches use it.
He has used it before, and I can't pinpoint the exact day, but I do remember days leading up to the game in New York, he had used that phrase.
Well, I don't mean to be a buzzkill, but when coaches say that, it annoys me because, of course, you can have your Super Bowl ring taken away from you. You know, it's just a ring. Somebody could come up to you and say, give me that, and somebody could steal it.
In the literal sense of it, yes. Somebody could steal it. But if you insure it, I mean, literally, you pretty much have it. I mean,
so you think I'm parsing words too much and
yes, you are.
Embracing the glory
exactly.
of it.
Exactly. Come on, Dave.
I'm just saying nobody can ever say that you're not a Super Bowl champion, but the physical ring I could take away from you.
Well, that's what he was talking about.
Nobody
All right. can take the champion
Then that's what he should say. He
shouldn't, title away.
It's confusing for people.
Too many words.
I know, but
you have to explain it. We're dealing with
I'm hypersensitive about dumb stuff.
Well, some guys didn't even get their degrees, so it's like, you know, come on, don't go into it too much. We're about to play a football game, man.
So how are you? First of all, we talked to you, I think, in like maybe it was a week right after the
February.
Super Bowl.
Yes, February.
You, Michael X. Bennett, he announced us because I got into him about Martellus Bennett, his brother.
Yes.
I told him, oh, you got some sound over there, black tie behind the glass?
You're not starting anymore? Man, you should be starting.
That was Michael Robinson telling us about the psychological games that he has to play with his foes. See, you pump them up, and then that makes them say, yeah, you're right. I should be playing more than I am.
Absolutely.
You're not starting anymore? Man, you should be starting.
Well played. I like that. See?
You have to use every advantage, man, especially as you get older in the game.
Wait a second. What is first of all, I wanted to say your outfit is sublime. What color is that suit? It's a small plaid you got going.
Yeah, it's I'm colorblind, so my wife put it together. I think it's black.
It looks very good. Whatever. I don't think it looks like almost like it's got a burgundy hue or maybe a brown hue. It's weird in the light here, but it looks really nice. I like it very much.
Thank you.
And what is the ring you're wearing?
This is Tiffany's made this ring especially for me and 52 other guys that played in this game called the Super Bowl. This is my Super Bowl ring. You know, 48 stones. Here you go, Dave.
I get to hold the Super Bowl ring. Get a picture of this black tie. This is as close as I ever get. Well, I mean, but the thing is, yeah, let me show what it looks like. I guess I shouldn't wear it on my ring fingers, though.
There it is, man.
Looks even bigger on my puny hand there. And now, I hate to do it
Can
to
I
you.
Can I just say, I love how you now stopped talking to take a photo on an audio podcast.
Yeah,
fair
like,
enough.
Really stopped.
Well, because you know what? I was contemplating my next move, and I hate to say this
you
to
you.
You
can't move fast enough.
But three minutes ago, I warned you. Now you've handed it over to me. Good luck. Now you have lost your Super Bowl ring, haven't you, Michael Robinson?
No, I have not. No, I have not.
You think you could take me?
Yes,
if it
I
comes
could.
To it, you think you would go after me and take me down?
Yes, I would.
All right. Take your ring. No, that's awesome. Thanks,
Thank
man.
You, brother.
Good for you. That's
Thank
all.
You, brother. I didn't want to have to do that anyway.
I thought it was always a ceremony, though. I thought they did that on the first game of the season kind of thing and get you a big cheer from the fans and everything.
Well, I think just because the team, you know, guys are in different places. Some guys, like myself, aren't playing. There's some guys in Jacksonville. There's some guys all over the place. And I think they wanted to do it in the offseason so we can get together as
that's
a team
nice.
One more time.
You know? I love the environment there. Let me ask you about this. This is something that – pretty much the day after the Super Bowl, I started talking quite a bit about, and I think maybe we addressed this when you came in back in February with, like I say, Michael Bennett, who to finish the tale. He is, you know, he has parents, and they named one of their kids Martellus and one Michael, which is weird. That's a lot of range in naming, right?
Yeah.
If you're the sort of parent who gives Martellus, you think you would come up
with
like Barkevius Mingo has a brother with an equally, you know,
creative
cuckoo name.
Yeah.
And but then we go back to Michael. So was it like they were trying to have the best of both worlds? I said, we got to do something about this name, Michael Bennett. He said, let's just go Michael X. He wants to be Michael X from now on. I told him an X on the back of his jersey would look pretty cool.
That'd be awesome, but Mike's a little different, so he could possibly do that. He would change his name, so watch out. I mean,
they're
really
funny fellas. I like him and Martellus
the
quite a bit.
The entire family looks alike. Have you seen everybody? I mean, everybody looks the exact same.
It is
same.
Funny how
I mean,
much they look alike. Yeah, the brothers at least. I haven't
see
seen
everybody.
The other two, really.
Everybody looks the exact same. I mean, they're a great family, man. We've celebrated together after some games, man. They're awesome.
Yeah, smart. A couple of smart, very funny guys. Yeah, fun to get together with. And that seems like what the Seahawks are about. Two things that stand out to me about the Seattle Seahawks team, and let me know what you think about this. One is that Pete Carroll has changed the argument now to me. I think it's changed the approach of successful, maybe not Pete Carroll specifically, maybe he's riding a wave that seems to be the new philosophy with NFL franchises, and maybe across the board in pro sports. Witness, I don't know if you heard, this guy LeBron James has decided to leave his home in South Beach and move back to the Cleveland area now. I feel like you hear Pat Riley say, it takes guts, you can't walk out the door at the first opportunity. You hear, I'm not trying to compare the tone and the message, but, you know, Richie Incognito a year ago, he gets basically what he was going for, what the Dolphins, if you believe what Incognito says, was encouraged to do was to toughen this guy up, you know. And
yeah.
Jonathan Martin didn't like it. Dwight Howard fled L.A. because Kobe is that A personality, you know, that get-in-your-face kind of guy, and some guys just don't like that. I feel like what I'm leading to is the 21st century athlete now again? So, you know, Bob Knight doesn't work in the 21st century. Vince Lombardi even might not work in the. You have to be nice. People want to have a good. Listen, you're professionals now. You have a different sort of frame of mind about, you know, I want to stay healthy and I want to take care of my family. And the amount of money there is such that you want to. And we know so much now about CTE and you don't, you know, it's not about getting in your face and all that kind of stuff. Am I right that that's antiquated and Pete Carroll is embracing more that player's coach kind of mentality and that works for?
Absolutely, Dave. I mean, the athlete has changed. I mean, you have to think about this. With social media and all the avenues that players have to communicate with fans, you have to make your work environment. I think Pete has really embraced this. He's made the work environment so fun.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, literally, it was such a contrast when I left San Francisco and went to Seattle.
Hmm.
He makes the work environment so fun. Literally, it's hard to go to sleep the night before because you're excited about waking up to go to work. It was totally different. You know, playing music when you go into the meeting, shooting basketball, you know, I think he's understood the psychological part of it. I mean, he's surrounded us with all the resources so that all we have to do is do what God put us here to do, is play football. You know what I mean? He's got psychologists there. He's got nutritionists there. You don't really have to think about much. And he's just creating a family environment where guys, they wake up and they're excited about practice. They're excited about just listening to whatever he has to say.
Well, I mean, yeah, that pretty much is what I imagine. You do hear from – I've talked with a number of Patriots over the years, and Bill Belichick seems more – Vince Lombardi than he does Pete Carroll. But in fact, from hearing guys, they say, oh, behind closed doors, he's fun. He makes it enjoyable. Of course, he cuts more the figure of, like, don't talk to the media, shut it down. And even Pete Carroll even says, Richard Sherman can say what he wants. Be your own guy. That seems like, to me, that if you go against that, I mean, I'm not just picking on Greg Schiano, but, you know, Greg Schiano, that didn't work out, that two-year experiment, and he is that throwback, in-your-face, hard-nosed kind of guy, talking in those platitudes and everything. It does seem – you think about the guys that are successful. Mike Tomlin, Andy Reid, Rex Ryan to some degree, you know, has had a couple rocky seasons, but that's the way to create a winner. It's not just, the short-term gain is guys want to be a part of this, but it seems the long-term is you win more, too.
You absolutely do, and I've had this conversation with guys in the league. You take Tom Brady away from Bill Belichick, and the losses mount up. I think Tom Brady has been a big-time buffer for Bill Belichick's different coaching style. Tom Brady's won games for him. Mm-hmm. I hear those guys, you know, do some wild things at practice with regards to conditioning and all those things that you just can't do anymore. Uh-huh. It's not the Junction Boy days. These guys are coming into camp game shape, game ready. It's not like we have to spend training camp to get the guys in shape anymore. I mean, just small stories like that is why that type of coaching style is getting to be a little bit outdated.
I think it's sort of like anything else, that the league, that the pro sports have grown up collectively over the last, you know, 25, 30 years. When I was growing up, I remember, I think it was 81-ish, when Dave Winfield signed $1 million deal, and it was front page news. He didn't make $1 million a year, I don't think, if I remember correctly. I think the deal amounted to a big figure. And oh, how people swooned. And it took a little time, a generation or two, but now all the pro athletes now understand it's a business. You know, there are very few guys who don't grasp that concept. You guys are businessmen. And when people say things like, you know, as a for instance, Carmelo Anthony, like, you know, why would he sign with the Knicks? What does he need that extra $20 million for? Because you're
off the court deal.
That's right.
I mean, that's where the money
is. Don't treat pro athletes any differently than you would anyone else. Listen, you know what they are? They're businessmen. Carmelo Anthony, if all you want is a new car or two, then yeah, you can get by on the $80 million. Yeah, I think you'll survive nicely. If you want an extra house or take some extra trips, if you want a piece of ownership, you want that extra $20, $30 million. I think this is something that fans are missing out on, that it's so easy to say, oh, what do these guys need that extra couple? Because they're looking – they have higher aspirations beyond the game.
It's the new age of athlete. Again, with social media, I can build my own brand without paying a professional to do it. I can sit at home and tweet and create pictures and do whatever I want to create whatever brand I want. And that's what guys are doing. I love Johnny Manziel. Go have fun, man.
I agree with that.
You know
I agree
what I mean?
With that for
so
the
what?
Most part. Yeah.
I mean, seriously, yeah. Honestly, but when it's time to play football, you know, be the example and be all about it 24/7. But it's not like guys back in the day didn't go out and have fun. Mm-hmm. It's just that there wasn't a camera phone for people to tweet about.
I know. It's somehow darling that Max McGee went out on a twister the night before the first Super Bowl and then caught two. But now shame the devil if anybody enjoys. As I always say about Johnny Football in defense of him, if you think Peyton Manning and Tom Brady do nothing when they leave the practice facility, but
oh,
go home
crazy.
And eat ice cream with sprinkles
you're
on it. You're probably a little naive there. Real quick, you mentioned San Francisco. To me, I would have thought Jim Harbaugh is one of those players, coaches who makes a lot of fun. Not as much fun as what it is in Seattle.
Well, you have to remember, I was there before Jim Harbaugh.
I'm thinking. So I thought you went back there briefly and were around Jim Harbaugh
for a little while. No. I was with Mike Nolan drafted me. Mm-hmm. Then Mike Singletary came in and made us practice two times a day, full pads, nutcracker drills, and all of that type of stuff. But, you know, whatever. But
can't say it.
That's Mike. That's, I asked him to say, what was the Vernon Davis? Like, can't do it.
He said, won't do it.
He said, I can't do it. Won't. Yeah. So he instead just gave me this. Can't say it. Close enough. Anyway, and then Pete Carroll, the other question I have about him specifically is he a good coach? Because to me, and I'm not going to rip anybody specifically right here, but you watch some of those Hard Knocks. If you go back and watch them, some of those guys stand out as, does he ever talk about actual X's and O's? Does he ever actually coach any player on technique? He seems like he just rolls through rooms and gives inspirational sort of platitudes and then walks back out. Is Pete Carroll, does he actually coach guys up, or is that left to other people?
Yes, he does coach guys up, but what I do say is Pete puts a lot of responsibility on his assistant coaches. Mm-hmm. If Marshawn fumbles, or if I may miss a block or something like that in a game, he's going to go to Coach Sherm and say, Sherm, your guys, get them together. And that's that whole accountability factor, you know what I mean? And you know, Coach Sherm will come to us and say, guys, we got to hold on to the ball. Mike, you can't miss that block. Look what you're doing to me upstairs, you know what I mean? And then we develop that pride, that sense of, you know, protecting our coach. Mm-hmm. We don't want to make him look bad. So it kind of develops that line of, you know, of accountability that, you know, it makes it fun to go to work.
All right. Well, so that's that. And, you mentioned Marshawn Lynch. That was the other thing I just wanted to ask you was, what about, I know you're his best chum, or one of his best chums at least. You were his mouthpiece at the Super Bowl and all that stuff when he didn't want to participate in Media Day and everything. Why didn't he go to the White House? That bugs me. And I'm not some, you know, blind-eyed patriot. I mean, of course, love the red, white, and blue and all that. But I didn't like that. I thought that was, if you have a chance to go meet the President of the United States, you do it.
Well, you know, I don't know.
With your team, especially.
I don't know exactly, you know, the ins and outs of that, but from my understanding of it, I think he has something else going on. I mean, it's just
his mother said he didn't feel like it.
Yeah, he just didn't feel like going, you know? I mean, that's Marshawn. And, I mean, you go meet the president. You can't take pictures of him. They smack your cameras and stuff down. I mean, you get to see him. I mean, you shake his hand. But it's like you really go see the White House.
Yeah.
And you see the president for a second.
So you were there, though,
yeah,
right?
I mean, I was there. I mean,
what'd you call him?
President, Mr. President.
You there? You say hello, Mr.
Yeah,
president.
You
don't
doing,
call
Mr.
him
president?
Barry or anything like that?
No.
No?
No.
That would be that. Maybe disrespectful, too. Yeah, you probably can't get away with that. All right, Black Tie, hit it. We want to do a quick pre-training camp edition of something we haven't done in a little while here.
Do we, though?
Inside. What do you mean?
We have like 2 minutes left.
Oh, we only have two. Oh, man. Michael Robinson, you're too good. It's too interesting to kibitz with you.
I apologize.
So didn't just tell us without the pomp and circumstance. At this time on the calendar, what is the football player thinking right now? You're about to head off to camp. What's the frame of mind?
Well, it depends. If you're a guy 5 years and up, you're probably like, oh man, you're looking at the calendar. Oh, two-a-days are coming. Why?
How bad is it? How long does it go when you do one? When you do two a days, how much is each practice then?
Well, with the new rules, I mean, you can't be on the practice any longer than 3.5-4 hours anyway. Even when you have two a days, so mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like it used to be when I first came into the league. Again, Mike Singletary, we had practices, two practices a day, full pads. Both practices were 2.5 hours. I mean, it was nuts. I mean, we went 2-0, but then lost the next eight. I mean, you know, that's what happens when you have too tough of a training camp. But training camp, I mean, it's just tough. It's just because you're just not around your people. I used to tell Coach Carroll, let the older guy stay at home. It'll make training
I agree
camp
with
so
that.
Much better.
You should get to show up like 2 weeks later than everybody else.
You know, I mean,
freshman orientation,
exactly,
or whatever you want to call it. Yeah.
Exactly. Let the newbies, you know, do their own thing and get acquainted with the league, and then we come in and then the real football starts. But no, nah, man, I would rather stay at home, lay next to my wife. So.
Of course, who wouldn't? that seems like the bummer. The worst thing about being a pro football player, you have to go do that for a month out in the heat. Where do you do it in Seattle? Where do they do
in
it?
In Seattle, they do it. They do it right in Renton, right at the.
Well, so it's
facility.
At least it's not humid there. It must be worse if you're like on Houston or something like that.
I have been blessed. I've worked in San Francisco and Seattle. Both training camps were awesome. So
that would be like at the. I would consider. I mean, I guess the amount of money I would get paid would somehow factor in there. The quality of the team, if the coach is nice. Because like I always say, Bob Knight, I went to Indiana University. I cheered for his teams. But if Coach Knight yelled at me like that, it wouldn't make me better. It would make me cry and maybe wet myself. Like, that wouldn't be good for me. That doesn't work on everybody. So that would be another consideration. The quality of the uniforms. And then lastly, is it nice and cool at training camp? Because I don't want to have to go like Jacksonville. I remember
the quality of the uniforms.
That's in there. I mean, it's not number one, but it's a consideration.
Really?
Yeah. If I have to wear that Jacksonville helmet, that's no. Sorry, I can't make your team.
Who cares about?
I care about it.
Really?
You think I want to be a guilt by association? You're a stylish man. You mean to tell me it doesn't make a difference to you what you
Let
look
me
like?
Tell you something. I can
you
make,
wore the nice Penn
I can
State
make
uniform.
Any uniform look fly.
See, I don't have that kind of confidence. So you see.
Well, see, it's in you. It's not in the uniform.
What about the Penn State uniform?
The best uniforms ever.
I like it very much. It's top three college uniform.
I mean, what are better? Which ones are better?
I like Alabama with the numbers on the side of the hat. That's cool.
That's classic.
Yeah, also
okay.
Classic. And the third great classic is Texas. I love the burnt orange, especially when they're on the road and they go that all white. It's so clean looking nice.
I get it. I can roll with those two. Penn State's cleaner.
Yes, Black Tie. You have a question you'd like to ask our guest, Michael Robinson?
I was wondering, obviously, you know, you're a veteran NFL player, been in the league for so long. Last week, LeBron was all over the news, you know, all over ESPN, obviously making his decision. You see an NBA player, an athlete, wield so much power. Me and Sheck were talking about it. Does the NFL player have that sort of power and kind of realize, really, no. What's the relationship like between an NFL player, NBA player, or just athletes from other leagues? Do you guys see that and feel a certain type of way? Is it, you know, what's that relationship been like in your career?
Black Tie with an actually
wow,
good
that
question.
Was a loaded question. Right
that was
there.
A good one, though.
Wow,
I like
that
question,
awesome.
Black Tie.
Honestly, I really feel like I understand what athletes go through. LeBron has to be like that to protect his brand, to protect who he is. Go get as much money as you possibly can, man. Make all the decisions. If you can be in the driver's seat and force things to happen in the league, go right ahead. Because in the National Football League, that just couldn't happen.
Well, to some degree, Peyton Manning tilted things, and he held a couple of teams, including the Seahawks, briefly hostage, waiting to see what he was doing. Certainly not on this level.
But what did it do for Denver? I mean, did they win a Super Bowl?
No, they did not, Michael Robinson.
Then all the hoopla was for naught.
Speaking of hoopla, will LeBron win a title with Cleveland?
I think yes. I think right now the circumstances are different in Cleveland than what they were when
people
he left.
Are not paying attention.
Yeah.
Kyrie Irving right now is easily the best Cleveland teammate
yes.
he's ever had.
Ever had.
And if you go look up Andrew Wiggins, if you haven't seen him yet, dig him up. He is ready to go. Those super athletic wing guys in the NBA do not typically flame out.
No.
Like, the low end for him, in my book, is Tracy McGrady. I know this is lofty stuff, but Tracy McGrady is sort of the low end. Scottie Pippen's the high end. What are you making eyes about, Black
Tracy
Guy?
Tracy McGrady in his prime.
In his prime, yeah.
Was legit. That's not low end. Tracy
that's
McGrady.
All right. Andrew Wiggins, it looks pretty good,
say,
too.
I would say his likely ceiling, probably not low end, but likely, if he's just what he's supposed to be,
what's the
is
worst
Paul
he
George.
Could be? Oh, well, all right. That would be terrible if he wound up being Paul George. That wouldn't be too bad. Or Kyrie Leonard or any of those guys.
Yeah. No, better than Kyrie, probably.
I love the pieces there. But back to football, speaking of winning titles, tell me why. I have some thoughts on why this would be. Why won't the Seahawks repeat this year? I know injuries. So if Russell Wilson gets hurt, obviously that's bad news. Who's the guy besides him that they cannot that the team just cannot afford to lose?
Well, I think Pete Carroll's created a roster and competition, a competitive philosophy that I think they can lose anyone with the exception of Russell or Marshawn. Honestly, right now.
Is the division to me? It's counterintuitive that people always say, "Well, the division's so tough, ergo they can't do anything." If you look at who wins the Super Bowls, it's the teams that come out of rugged divisions. There's usually another team from that division in the postseason. That helps.
My question for the Seahawks this year is: there's a lot of young guys in that locker room with new money. When issues come up in the locker room, who is the veteran that settles it? I mean, last year you had guys like Red Bryant, Chris Clemens, myself, that they could rely on. You know, things come up. Hey, guys, man, stop doing that. Hey, you go over there, and it's over. No more. Mm-hmm. And guys will stop. Right now, guys have gotten paid. You know what I mean? Guys have got egos. You know what I mean? That's just only natural with money. And they have to watch against that in the locker room. And that's something that Pete can't see. Their offices are upstairs. And they just have to keep a close watch on that.
I'll tell you what. The Steelers 2-3 years ago suffered from that when they let James Farrier and everybody else walk away. Then the Super Bowl champion Ravens, same thing. They lost those big veteran presences. Not necessarily great on the field anymore were those guys. But when they walked away, who filled that vacuum? That's a fascinating point. I'm surprised that it isn't Richard Sherman, but is he so bombastic and, you know, involved in his I appreciate it. I'm not diminishing him by saying it's WWE style, like in-your-face trash-talking, but is that so far, you know, is he so hyperbolic in that regard that you can't really, he can't counsel other people, other
players?
No,
I'm not saying that. Richard's a great counselor. I mean, he's a guy that I even confide in with certain issues, but again, he's still very young. You just can't add years to him. You can't add vested years to him. He's just so young. Again, there are guys in that locker room that are older. I mean, you look at big Kevin Williams. I think they have the D-tackle there now. I mean, he's an older guy. He's a guy that I think they would delegate that role to. But other than that, I mean, Chris Averill is probably the next oldest guy. What, not 7 years in the league? I mean, that's not that old.
He's another fun guy. I'll tell you this. Seattle is an easy team to like because of the players on it. All right, Black Tie's blowing the whistle. Michael Robinson, you've got to go do fancy TV. See, this was just your warm-up here. See, this was your training camp of sorts, and now you get to go into the regular season called Total Access on NFL Network. Go do it. Listen, talk about calling a shot, like I said, with Babe Ruth. I'm calling another shot here. Michael Robinson is destined for football talking success here because you're one of the best who does it. And that was when you were still playing. Now when you focus entirely on this as your career, go get
I'm
it,
excited.
Man.
Mike, Rob, I need a podcast so we can keep the time. Interested?
I'm very interested.
We're putting together a dream team. We could have Michael Robinson. What if we did Michael Robinson, A.J. Hawk, and Sway Ike Taylor? Oh. Now, I mean, what a show we would have.
Let me tell you, we can talk about some real issues. Yes. I mean, real issues.
All right, go now before I get in trouble. I don't want you to get in trouble. Look at this. They've dispatched no fewer than 3 people to take you over. What's that Damashek imbecile doing again? We need him out on the stage, Michael Robinson. Thanks, man. Great seeing you. And again, congratulations on the ring, and even more importantly, the suit. The suit's terrific.
Dave Damashek.
All right, so there he goes, Michael Robinson. That's not jive. I wasn't just saying that, Black Tie, to curry favor with him. I really do think he's destined for great things and talking about football.
I agree. I need it. Like I said, I'm looking for a podcast host who can keep to time.
I don't know why. I don't deserve that. I don't think I deserve that.
You
so
like that
what?
Final whistle? Though?
My
that
charm.
Soccer final whistle?
That was fun. Yeah. Good for you on that one. Yeah. And good for you on the good question, too, to him. That was interesting stuff. The thing I disagree with him about, though, is that the only position they can't replace if somebody gets hurt is at running back, if Marshawn Lynch gets hurt. I don't know about that. Don't they have some nice depth there?
Boy, you know.
I guess so. Yep. Hey, real quick, Michael Robinson leaves. I wanted to update you on the aforementioned A.J. Hawk, you know, another one. What a show that would be, Black Tie. Is that the show? Damashek, Hawk, Sway Ike Taylor, Michael Robinson. Who's beating that show? You might do as well, but you can't do better, right?
I think that's a good show. In all seriousness, if Mike Robb, you know, somehow is around here a little bit more, love to have him on the show during
the season. Imagine that. 3 different characters from across these United States with different football playing experiences. So I hit up A.J. Hawk to let him know we're not going to Tahoe because we're a year removed now from our magical duet. We sang what did we sing?
Man
Black or White? A Man in the Mirror. Mm-hmm. I'm looking. Well, you can play it back if you want to. But anyway, I hit him up and said, sorry, we ain't making it to Tahoe. Hawk is disappointed about that. But he said, let's get me and the Pistol Hawk, his father, on the show. I said, let's do a Big Ten preview. We got to do that. And he responded, yep, definitely. We got to do that before the season starts. And he writes, I run into someone almost every day that says they love hearing me, being AJ Hawk, on the Damashek show. How about that, Hawk? I mean, how about that black tie?
Damashek's a genius.
Well, I mean, Hawk is right when he's right. You know, that's it.
I learned from the best, Mr. Dave Damashek.
Ah, Hawk. I hope he wins that golf tournament going on in Tahoe this week. All right, in the meantime,
come on, playa.
We start. I don't deserve that either.
People love that drop, by the way.
That was me trying to keep up with Deion Sanders and Michael Irvin.
During the hold on players segment.
They're hold on.
Come on, playa.
All right.
What's up with that?
I have my own things I do. That's his thing. I don't know. I don't have him come on to the Sheck Report and shout shame on anybody. I mean, he would mess that up just the same way. All right. Speaking of guys that are much hyped, this next guest of ours walking in here now, you may recall if you were listening 2-3 weeks ago, we brought in researcher extraordinaire Bill Smith to join us and kibitz about this, that, and the other. The NFL media gang produces some fascinating stats, and I feel like some of them slip through the cracks. As much football is talked online, on podcasts, and on NFL Network, still, we don't capture everything. And these are some fascinating characters here that we get to work with. They create all these numbers, and I want to put them to good use, namely here on the Dave Damashek football program. And mainly because, some people work in oils, some work in clays. I work in reckless speculation. I would like someone to sort of mind my P's and Q's for me a little bit. Correct me where I'm wrong, because I make assumptions and because they're developed by what my gut and my heart tell me. But maybe once in a while those are fallible. Unlikely, but it's possible. So that's why we now have the colleague of mine and Black Ties and Bill Smith's, Drew Christensen, joining us. What's the poop with you, fella?
Oh, you know, it's appropriate that you would transition from an Ohio State guy with A.J. Hawk to a Michigan man like myself.
Oh, see, I didn't know that about you.
We can just start that Big Ten preview right now.
Yeah, let's. I really do want to do it. How are the Wolverines looking? Well, and before you answer that, though, Brady Hoke, cool personality. The vibe seems right.
Yeah.
Except for the fact that the results ain't there yet. And you should see signs of a turnaround 3 years in, right?
Well, yeah, but I mean, anyone that looks like they could be a stand-in on The Sopranos, I'm down with patrolling my sideline. No headset. It's a throwback.
Style over substance, in other words.
Come on. I love it. What do you need a headset for?
Yeah, true enough. And but who is – so Ohio State is supposed to – they're the prohibitive favorite in 2014.
Let's talk about that later.
All right, yeah, we can – I do want to – it feels like the draft just ended, so it feels premature to start looking ahead already. But if you go to NFL.com and look up the college football work that everybody's doing there, they've already put out an amazing list ranking the quarterback situations 1 through 128 in college football. It's great stuff. Like I say, NFL.com, you can track that one down. I went through it a little bit, and we forget. Jameis Winston's on his way. I said this, during the season last year, Johnny Football, and I like the way some of these guys look. Derek Carr, I like the way he slings it around. Blake Bortles and the rest. I'll take Jameis Winston over any of those guys, and I don't have to think very long about that, right?
No, and with Marcus Mariota and some of those other guys, it's a good time to be a college football fan.
All right, so I want to make this a regular thing here, and one of the bringing you in, talking stats and everything else, and maybe football fans are a little bored because contracts aren't fun to talk about, and this Jimmy Graham situation, is he a tight end, is he a wide receiver? Tell why, in the dollar sense, given his production on the field, why it's so important for him to be a wide receiver. Do you have some numbers to make the case why it's way better to be a receiver?
Well, yeah, I think his case is valid in that he's more of a receiver than a tight end. When you just look at when Graham was off the field last year, the Saints rushed the ball over 60% of the time. And if you're a tight end, you think that your team's going to keep you on, in those running situations. When he was on the field, they only ran the ball 20% of the time.
That's a bad, but that's a tell, and that's maybe bad for the team.
Well, it could be a tell, but, talk about tells. Antonio Gates was only off the field 12 times last year when the Chargers passed. So, you notice that big old guy lugging off the field. The Chargers are going to pass the ball or
so
run the ball.
Jimmy Graham walks off the field, that they're going to be – you can almost be certain that they're going to run the ball.
Yeah.
The thing that stands out to me, though, is if, you know, and we did the top 100 show again this year, and Jimmy Graham came in at 10, I think, or 10.
He made it this year.
Yeah, he did sneak past Dennis Pitta and and Charles Clay and all the rest of the guys. And he got, he was the highest rated tight end. And so, you know, we were debating it a week ago, like I say, if he's placed properly. And it's interesting, from a dollar standpoint, of course it makes sense that he wants to be a wide receiver, because I think even with the deal that he has, there are 10 wide receivers, at least, I think, maybe 8 or 10, something like
that
make more money than he does.
Exactly.
And when you see the names, you realize, oh, they don't really stack up with what Jimmy Graham does. But on the other hand, statistically, though, he doesn't really stack up with even – he's not in the top 10 in any categories outside of touchdowns. He had 16, which is monstrous for a wide receiver or a tight end. But otherwise, his numbers don't suggest that he's an elite wide receiver, if you categorize him that way.
Yeah, well, it also helps that he's playing with Drew Brees and in the offense he's in to, you know, put up those kind of numbers. And, you know, really just thinking about him as a wide receiver versus a tight end, and you're going to give him wide receiver money, you can look down the list of receivers and how many of those guys, the wide receivers, would you take over Jimmy Graham. And I think that there's even more than the 8 to 10 that are getting paid more. I think that you could come up with probably 15 receivers that you would rather have.
Are you aware of anyone, because I've never seen this happen to a wide receiver, save Randy Moss, is literally the only example of any wide receiver who's seen this. I can't remember anybody doing it to Calvin Johnson. The metaphor I always use is the Jenga game. If every NFL team is a game of Jenga, you can take away pieces, because it's inevitable that in the 21st century, you're going to lose players over the course of a season. That's going to go down. But if you take away the wrong one, the whole thing can implode. Now, of course, that's true with quarterbacks almost across the league. But non-quarterbacks, Jimmy Graham, to me, is the most important Jenga piece out there. Do you have anything that would support that as the case?
I mean, no, I think that's just, you know, you going with your gut. But I also think that...
Well, what I was going to say is I've only seen defensive teams defensively bracket a guy like he's the gunner on punt coverage. I've seen them do that to Randy Moss. I don't know if I've seen Calvin Johnson get that.
I think teams have done it to Calvin.
But when they, I mean, you know what I'm talking, I mean, for the listener, you've seen punt coverage when the gunner breaks out wide and they'll put two guys out on the field to block him so he can't break free and get downfield before
Jerry
the ball
Graham
runs.
Got that coverage last season. Tony Gonzalez got it a couple of times too.
Oh, really?
Calvin as well. Yeah. Tony in, you know, red zone situations.
But to me, I mean, the thing that Jimmy Graham covers up is a lack of high-grade pass catchers. You know, Marcus Colston is good, has had a nice career, but if you look him up, he's not – at the very least, he's not productive game in and game out. I mean, he can go silent, and after that, pedestrian stuff out there.
Well, but and all those guys in that system put up great numbers. I mean, Meacham put up those great numbers, and then he went away, and no one heard from him again. So I think – you know, you got to take – could Jimmy Graham put up those same numbers if, I don't know, Geno Smith is thrown to him?
I don't know. You tell me. I feel like, yes, Drew Brees is one of the best. He's going to wind up with a gold jacket and all that sort of thing. But I contend that at this point, and people hold up, well, Drew Brees won a Super Bowl without Jimmy Graham, so you're a moron, Damashek, except for the fact – that, you know, Marcus Colston was still in his prime, and Lance Moore was playing well at the time, and what's his name, Jeremy Shockey was still, you know, relevant as a pass catcher, and so on. In over the last 3 years, I would say Drew Brees needs Jimmy Graham more than the other way around.
I don't know. I don't know that I agree. I think that it's a lot of the same way that the, you know, when Brady was winning his championships, it was with a whole bunch of guys. And I think that, to a large part, some of those guys that are with Brees are just guys. I mean,
I don't think Jimmy Graham is.
As a Steeler fan, are you to the moon that Lance Moore is going to be catching passes?
No, but that's my point. I think that those guys aren't good as a core of wide receivers. I do, though, think that Jimmy Graham, I think Drew Brees has it pretty easy. Nobody has it as easy as that, save Tom Brady when Gronkowski is healthy, and Matt Stafford when Calvin Johnson's out there, that you can literally, and Drew Brees will confirm this, because I've asked it to him directly, he can go back into the huddle and say, hey, just run 15 yards over the middle of the field. I'm going to toss it up to you. And it's that easy. There's no bad that can come from that. It's like when Plexico was at his best. You know, there are three things that can happen on a pass, and only one of them is bad. But when you're 6'5" or 6'7" and thicker, especially like Jimmy Graham, the DB ain't picking the ball off. He's either going to knock it down or catch it. It's not going to get intercepted.
I think that it's just with the game changing, he's the first of, you know, of this kind. Maybe not the first. You know, that might go back to Tony Gonzalez, but you look at all the, you know, all the guys that got picked this year in the draft with Ebron, and then some of the other guys, the Swope that the Colts are taking a chance on. Some of these, you know, these basketball players that, you know, defense is just going to have to catch up and learn that. You know, we got to have someone that's athletic enough to, you know, cover a guy that's 6'5" going right down the middle, and that we're just too early in that player, you know, being in the league. I don't know that is Jimmy Graham going to go down as the greatest tight end in NFL history.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting question because, of course, like you started out by saying, he doesn't block. So how could you categorize him as the greatest tight end ever? However, the numbers that he's putting up might leave him in that spot. And to answer what you said 4 minutes ago, or the question you asked 4 minutes ago, yeah, I think he would put up big numbers. I think if you could put him on for almost any situation, put him in almost any spot, and he's going to be productive.
What I think is the most interesting thing about this Graham is that he just blew the lid off of the tight end market, and everyone else is huddled around that $6.5-7 million, and he just blew it open to 10. So now,
who's know, up? Is there? Do when, you know off the top of your head who's up?
No, I mean, you know, Gronk just redid his. I think 12. You know, Vernon obviously wants his new deal. And then with Jordan Cameron, some of these young guys coming up, you know, they're not going to point to that 7 anymore. They're going to point to that 10. And that's a huge gap to have gone from $7 million a year to $10 million a year. So I think that this next offseason, it's going to get real interesting with some of these guys trying to.
Even this August to see what happens with Vernon Davis, like you say. He's a key piece. And it's hard for me to believe that I say this, but he continues to be sort of a pseudo secret weapon for them. People don't acknowledge how integral he is. And somehow, I guess during the regular season, they're, you know, I guess the fantasy obsession makes him seem not as great as some of the, you know, the guys who put up slightly bigger numbers. He still is productive in the regular season, but he is the best player. You can make a case if you said, give me over the last 3 years, who's the best postseason performer in the NFL? Vernon Davis is it.
Yeah, I mean, you can pretty much put on his stat sheet that he's going to catch a touchdown when the game starts, and you're going to be right.
That's exactly right. All right, do you have any other numbers you want to throw out at us here? Do you want to produce some hidden numbers that aren't going to be on NFL Network or NFL.com anytime soon that you would like to shed a light on?
Well, I'm gearing up for the Hall of Fame. We got that coming up in a couple weeks here, so I brought a couple of Hall of Fame.
I like talking about the Hall.
Yeah, let's see what I mean. I guess where's your boy Elliot Harrison? Isn't he Mr. Hall of Fame?
No, I'm Mr. Hall of Fame. What do you mean? Isn't he? See, I got the Pittsburgh Steelers on my side. I got more in the Hall than he's got. He got his crummy Dallas Cowboys.
Well,
see, I don't even know if I have more Hall of Famers than the Cowboys.
Speaking of,
they are mine.
Of Cowboys, This is going to be the 8th year in a row that no quarterback goes into the Hall of Fame. The last time a quarterback went in was when Aikman and Moon went in together.
Holy hell, that's a crazy stat.
It's the longest time that we've gone between quarterbacks being inducted since the Hall opened.
That's crazy. And you know what else is interesting about that too? Now that you point that out, what are there, like 18 or 19 QBs? You would think if I said I wish I would ask Black Tie that I wish I would ask him that blind, how many QBs do you think in the Hall of Fame? If you asked me that before I heard this about a year or so ago, I would have said, I don't know, 40, 50, something like that. I think it's not even at 20 yet.
Yeah.
Whoa, that's great. What is that owed, do you suppose?
Oh, I mean, I don't know. I think that in the coming years, we've got Kurt coming up. We've got Brett Favre coming up. So obviously that number will
look
will
who's on a first
soon.
Name basis with Kurt Warner, I believe, who he's talking about. Yeah. My friend Kurt, with whom I work on occasion. Look at you, Drew. Okay, yeah, that's a fun one.
So
All right.
We got another one. I figure I'll go one name only here with Sapper. And when his boy Brooks goes in the Hall, he and Brooks were both drafted in the same draft class in 95. Same team, same round. You know, the last time teammates like that that fall, same draft, same team, same round, went in the Hall of Fame.
And you're asking me?
I'm asking, just guess.
I might guess something along the lines of, you know, Mike Webster and
some of your Steelers.
Yeah, that's right.
No.
Oh, that's not right. Oh, no. I assumed you were trying to curry favor with me.
No,
and you were going to go from the classic 74 draft class of Lynn Swann and John Stallworth and Mike Webster.
No.
And Jack Lambert.
See, they all did, and that four in that draft class is the most for any single team in a draft class.
But
They're all different rounds. It was the 63 Bears. It had Butkus and Sayers.
Oh, same round, too.
Yeah, come on.
I'm sorry. I missed that little nugget. And then of course, the Ray Lewis and Jonathan Ogden,
yep.
Same round, first round, that first draft ever.
So they'll do that, exactly, in a couple of years here when Ray's up. They'll join that
so
list.
They'll join that thing. Wow, yeah. That's a good one. I love it.
And then I guess we'll go future Hall of Famer. Peyton Manning's 55 touchdowns. I got a list here of some Hall of Famers that never even that had twice or half as many as their career.
It's funny. I just made this point. Of course, like I say, you know, whether it's you know, the juice or otherwise, the juice baseball. You know, the way numbers in baseball from 94 and you know until probably the juice ball era, it seems officially over now by a couple of years with pitching dominant performances these days, but they warp all the numbers, and so Steve Garvey and Dave Parker and guys like that don't get into the Hall of Fame because their numbers are you know puny by comparison. Same thing, the passing game has now made the numbers insane. Guys that aren't clearly the talents have these monstrous numbers now. This whole generation of guys that we're watching, and even the generation before that, Andre Reed and Art Monk and those guys, have monster numbers, better than some guys who clearly were more talented probably. And I said, Peyton Manning, if you cut his numbers last year in half, 5,500, if you go 27, 50, and 27 touchdowns, that's a great year 25 years ago in the NFL.
And Troy Aikman threw 20 touchdowns once.
Wow. And so what's the exact question? Because I want to ponder it quickly.
So there's just a handful of Hall of Famers here that never, you know, you cut those numbers in half, never threw half as many as Manning threw last year. Aikman's one. His boss,
Terry Bradshaw, I'm sure never did, right?
Bradshaw did. Oh, he just might not be on the list that I prepared, but the ones we pulled.
Well, that would make you a shoddy researcher.
Well, you know, come on, you
in the Hall of Fame, Y.A. Tittle. It's got to be guys that only played 14 games, right? Mostly.
Elway, 27.
What?
His career high.
Really?
Namath, 26. Aikman, obviously, 23, I mentioned.
I'm surprised by Namath, because early in his career, slinging it around the way they did.
Yeah, and Greasy, 22.
That's not a surprise. Yeah, Bob Greasy should have been the first name out of my mouth.
22. I mean, come on.
It's weird that guy's in the Hall of Fame. I agree with you about that. I mean, it's hard to deny that he was on that team that was pretty dominant in the first part of the 70s, but still.
If Ryan Tannehill only throws 22 touchdowns this year, there might be
outrage. It's not so much about what Peyton Manning does. It's who the bad QBs, what numbers they put up are dwarfing even some of these numbers. That's funny.
I was hoping that Sanchez would have thrown for 20 touchdowns more than once in his career, but unfortunately.
He
couldn't help me out.
All right, see, fascinating stuff. I love those numbers, and thanks for joining us, Drew Christensen. I want to get a rotation of Drew, Bill Smith, and Sudsy Siddell, and I want to get these, because I like hearing these things. They slip through the cracks, like I say, and then they don't go anywhere, and the world will see. These are, if nothing else, you go to the bar and you start mentioning those. You'll seem super smart when you pass these off as little nuggets of your own. All right, Drew Christensen, great stuff. Black tie. Good job getting Michael Robinson in here. This was a fun podcast, as I predicted. I called my shot, and it was fun. See?
You did call it the 33 Award Series. It's 32. So
look who's going the extra mile and looking it up. Black tie.
That's why they call it research and not guesswork.
Yeah, and you know what else? I don't care. Call it whatever you want. I call it reckless speculation, and I'm proud that that's how I do it. Because if I become bound by numbers and facts and inside sources, I'm doomed. I mean, you know, too late now for me. Or I'm doing it the way I do it.
Or if you stick to that, you might be an opening in our department for you.
I was just well. Do you see this though? Black tie. See, this is if nothing else, black tie now feels threatened by the presence of a researcher. I better research that home run. By
I work with the research team as well. During the season, I do a show called the Coaches Show podcast. I'm leading a lot of research for the stuff we put out there.
All right. Well, listen.
No
I
speculation on that podcast. Straight hard facts.
All right. Fine. If that's what you prefer, then go listen to your facts.
Isn't Mooch on that show? There's no hard facts.
Coach, where are you, G?
All right. Well, thanks to Drew, his friend Kurt, and
I successfully name dropped three.
You really did.
That was great.
Yeah,
first
but
name,
I
first
trumped
name basis.
I trumped you though because I. Not only name drop, but I mentioned that I got a text from a football player.
Yeah, you read it out live. Yeah. And then you also posed for a picture doing the show with the Super Bowl ring.
And that was, you know what? That was a shame. In hindsight, he handed it to me. What was I supposed to do? It would have been a slap in the face to not put it on.
You could have been talking at the same time.
I don't think it's taboo to wear it. I don't like the NHL, the new tradition that you can't touch the conference trophies. That's dumb. But I shouldn't have really put that on. I'm a Steeler guy. I don't put on the Seahawks ring. Dirty Seahawks ring?
No,
shame on
Twitter
me.
No, too bad.
Is that right? You put it out on Twitter?
Well, not yet. I will soon.
Let's hold off on that. Let's not let the world know about that. I'm embarrassed as a
Steeler
guy. Just
hit send. Sorry.
All right. Yeah. All right. Well, listen. Good times. We'll be back with another podcast for you later in the week as NFL kickoff draws nearer and nearer. In the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.